Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Wolf et al. Titled, Atrial and Sinus Node Arrhythmias and Ancrin-B Syndrome. This article published online February 22, 2013. My guests today are Associate Editor Igor Efimov, Lead Author Thomas Hund, and Expert Natalia Tryanova. Let's get started.
Welcome. This is Igor Efimov, and I'm really happy to start this discussion. This manuscript is very appealing to me because it's one of the first steps towards integrative concept of cardiac arrhythmias. And in this particular case, it's focused on a structural protein, ancrin B, which is quite a departure from usually ion channel focused research of cardiac arrhythmias. In this comprehensive multi-scale computer model, Thomas Hunt was able to put with his team a very interesting twist in the story of cardiac arrhythmias and focusing on dysfunction of both sinus node and its ability to produce action potentials, but also conduction of these sinus node potentials to the atrial myocardium. First, I would like to ask Thomas Hunt to essentially highlight his major findings and also to bring a take-home message.
Yeah, thank you very much. Basically, I think, you know, this work was interesting to us for a few reasons. First and foremost, the idea that we have a monogenic disorder, so a mutation linked to a single protein. In this case, it's the ancrin B protein. And really how a monogenic defect can give rise to such disparate phenotypes across the heart. So in previous work, we and I, our collaborators, especially Peter Moeller here at OSU, had looked at how defects in this very important structural protein produced arrhythmias in a specific region of the heart, in the ventricles. And in this work, we wanted to take it a step further because it turns out that patients who have these mutations in ancrin, and now we know that mutations in ancrin have been identified in multiple populations. We know that there are many different mutations in this ancrin protein that compromise the function. And these patients are extremely fascinating from a clinical perspective because they have awful ventricular arrhythmias, which are the ones that we tend to associate with the sudden death. But in addition to that, they have these complicated atrial arrhythmias, and they have pronounced sinus node dysfunction. So many of these patients require a pacemaker or implantation at a very young age. And actually, sinus node dysfunction can be detected even in utero in these patients. So, you know, for us, the primary question was, how can a monogenic disorder give rise to this wide range of phenotypes? And so I think the work in this study gives some important insight into how that happens.
Well, thank you very much for this nice introduction. And now I would like to invite Natalia Tryanova, world expert in multi-scale modeling, who really built the expertise in this field across the continents and was able to put together across the scale models from very accurate single-cell models to intact human heart models. So, Natalia, please join our discussion.
Thank you, Igor, and thank you, Tom. I very much echo your sentiment that understanding how a certain monogenic disorder, a certain molecular dysfunction can lead to arrhythmia can be very different depending on the structure in which the defect can be found. And you very clearly demonstrate this in this paper. This, to me, is really sort of a breakthrough, if you will, because very often, research is focused on understanding only what happens at the level of the single cell. And mechanisms that we identify at the single cell often do not translate to mechanisms of arrhythmia in the entire organ. And you clearly demonstrate this here. In addition, finding only the cellular trigger of arrhythmia often is not enough because the substrate has to be susceptible to that arrhythmia. In your case, fibrosis plays this role. So it really underscored the case for doing multi-scale simulations from single cell to the organ or to the tissue or organ level and looking at the picture as a whole. I have a couple of questions to you. In this paper, you represent the fibrotic remodeling that occurs in the atria. I was wondering, since coupling of fibroblasts and atrial cells is not very well established. Have you considered looking at paracrine effects that might result from fibrotic remodeling?
That's a great question. And actually, that's kind of the next logical phase in the project, is to start to think about, you know, some of these signaling pathways, paracrine and otherwise, that might be critical. I mean, with the work that we show here, this is not definitely not the be-all and end-all. To the best of our ability, we try to incorporate everything we know about this disease, including the structural and single-cell changes. But as you point out, the fibroblasts in vitro, it's very clear they can form nice coupling with ventricular myocytes. But in the real heart, it's less clear what the level of coupling is and what their role is in terms of conduction. And so, yeah, so I agree that the paracrine signaling would be really important to look at. Other things that we know will be important that are not addressed in the model are related, for example, to phosphatase localization. So we know that the ankyrin not only targets these ion channels, but also targets proteins that regulate these ion channels. And the best example is PP2A, a protein phosphatase that antagonizes signaling involved in beta adrenergic stimulation and other pathways.
Do you think in your model representation, fibrosis, the fibroblasts, which are coupled to the atrial myocytes, not only slow conduction velocity, but they must have some sort of a sink effect on the myocyte action potential, because once the myocyte overshoots the resting potential of the fibroblast, which in your case is about minus 40, then the fibroblast will be sink of current, and they might additionally decrease action potential duration and alter repolarization. Do you think that effect is present as well?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think I haven't thought about it much in the atria. I've thought about that issue more in the sinus node, where I think the source sink issue is a little easier for me to wrap my head around. So here we examine just sort of one pretty basic representation of the fibroblasts where they're poorly coupled, they're inexcitable. But the model that we have here for the fibroblast really will require refinement going forward. And I think as we learn more about how exactly these fibroblasts are behaving in vivo, we'll be able to refine our models of the fibroblasts and be able to get at and quantify how exactly the fibroblast affects the atrial excitability in terms of being a source and a sink alternatively. I think in the sinus node, the presence of these fibroblasts, I think it's really interesting to contrast how the model predicts fibroblasts affect sinoatrial node activation compared to just heterogeneous uncoupling. So one thing we were able to do, because, you know, we have the model and we can control basically every parameter, so we can do lots of things and study the effects of independent parameters in a way that we can't do experimentally. And so in the model, we were able to say, okay, what happens if we increase the percentage of these inexcitable, poorly coupled cells? How does that affect the ability of the sinus node to do its job? And it turns out it has a negative impact. So loss of sinoatrial node cells and replacement with inexcitable, poorly coupled cells compromises the match between the sinus node and the atrium. And the idea of the importance of this source sink mismatch isn't new. This is an idea that goes back. But I think these studies really highlight the fact that we really have to be careful in the sinus node, where you have, I don't know, hundreds of cells that are responsible for excitation of many, many more cells.
And now I would like to invite Thomas to bring take-home message and also perhaps describe in several sentences, where do you go from there? How do you bring these findings to the next level of describing comprehensive three-dimensional structures of the sinus node of the human heart?
For me, you know, in speaking with Igor and Natalia, I think, you know, both of your groups have really been ahead of the curve in this push to make our thinking more integrative and less reductionist, right? So I think research as of late has gotten more and more reductionist. And I think maybe we've reached kind of a nadir of reductionism. And I think your groups have really led the way in how we can work in a more integrative way that will provide insight into emergent behavior, where something is greater than the sum of its parts. And you can't predict what's going to happen just by looking at the pieces. You have to put them together and study them in context of the whole system.
Well, thank you very much. I would like to thank our lead author, Thomas Hunt, for this wonderful description of a new breakthrough in modeling of sinus node in the settings of anchoring dysfunction, and also our expert, Natalia Trajanova, for really exciting, provocative questions. And this concludes our podcast. Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.